Vegas, sitting here with Michael Goudeau.
Yeah, baby.
The juggling half of Lance Burton's show. And we're sitting here to talk about stuff on Free FM. And good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Teller.
You know, Lance Burton, who's Michael Goudeau's boss and does the magic show here in town, a perfectly adequate magic show here in town, said that you know he's pure showbiz.
Pure showbiz.
Showbiz. And his hair's dyed black. And he wears a suit. He comes over my house. You know, I'm in my boxer shorts for a barbecue. And he's wearing a suit and he has, you know, magic tricks in his pocket in case one of us wants to see one of his magic tricks.
He's rabbit in his
pocket. Also carries like 8x10s, doesn't he? Like of himself?
You know, nothing. I haven't caught him doing that yet.
Or he has a little card or something. He has something that if you go up to Lance Burton and say, you know, could I have an autograph? He has a pen,
he has a Sharpie.
He has a Sharpie, so he can write on anything.
That's real showbiz.
If you want your ass autographed by Lance Burton, he has got a Sharpie with him. Me, I don't have anything with me. You know, if you really needed a souvenir, I'd have to give you my watch. You know, if I have nothing at all. I don't have a pen on me. I don't have any paper on me, nothing. Lance is ready. He has, you know, probably, anyway, Lance Burton doesn't usually get up at 11 a.m.
Right.
But because his dear friend, how long have you known Lance?
40 years.
40 years.
I've been in Lance's show since 1990.
Wow.
91. So, yeah, it's the best job ever.
And so Lance doesn't usually get up before, too, because he's pure showbiz.
Right.
But he's getting up at 11. He set his clock radio. 11
to keep
o'clock.
His eye on us, really.
Vegas time.
Vegas time.
Because we're on 2 o'clock in New York. And but it's 11 o'clock Vegas time. If it were 2 o'clock, he'd still have to set his alarm. and he gets up to listen to our show. So kind of as a joke for our dear friend Lance Burton, we decided to say good morning, Lance, in the morning. So yesterday morning, tell the story.
I get a call from Lance after the show, and he says, my girlfriend was very upset yesterday morning. She heard Penn's voice shouting, good morning, Lance. And she was trying to figure out how you had gotten into Lance's house. Oh, my gosh. Why is Penn in the house? She was apparently very upset that you had snuck into their house and was shouting to wake him up.
Lance's girlfriends have always been terrified of me.
As well they should be.
There's always been, whenever Lance has a girlfriend, he's gone through a few of them.
Well, you know, we've known him a long time.
A few hundred, sure. And there's always been discomfort. Because Lance, you know, barely tolerates me. You know, Lance and I have been friends now 15, 20 years, I know him. And he's always really nice to me, a real gentleman. But there's always, he always has this look like he's Roy and I'm the tiger. Like this could be the night that someone wears a hat and I rip him to pieces. Like if I lift my hands over my head too fast.
Flinches.
Just a little tiny bit. Not enough to be impolite. Not enough to be impolite, but just enough because it's deep in his little monkey brain. Mm-hmm. He knows that this big guy could snap at any second. And although he's made friends with the beast, he's still wild.
You're still a wild animal, that's
he can
right.
He still flip out. So this is, I guess, injected into his girlfriends. This feeling.
He's apparently told them the stories.
Told them the stories of
he
how...
He seems like a pet. But it's not really a pet. It's
he's
still a wild animal.
He's not as cuddly as he seems. He's just not as cuddly as he seems. You know, he could. I mean, don't look him in the eye. And he always thinks that if maybe I detect the high blood pressure, like Montecor detected on. Did I say the name right this time?
Yeah, Montecor, yes.
The Montecor, the tiger. I might just detect high blood pressure and just rip for go for his carotid artery.
Right,
you know?
Sure to
just take it right out.
That out.
But Lance, you know, he's a great guy, and I'm telling you, man, if you come to Vegas and you want to hang out with a showbiz guy,
that's the man.
Lance Burton will come out of his show. He's wearing makeup during his show. Okay? He wears makeup, which is so showbiz.
That's very showbiz.
And he needs it so much less.
He's a professional.
Than Penn and Teller do. And sometimes I don't even brush my hair, you know? often I don't shave. I go out and do the show. And Lance Burton, you know, he does the show. He's in a tux for some of it, isn't he?
Yes, almost all of it.
Almost. He's in a tux. And his hair's dyed, you know, Vegas black. I mean, I dye my hair because my hair is gray.
With a Sharpie.
Yeah, with a Sharpie. That's what I use the Sharpie for. I can't be carrying it around to do autographs. But he has that, you know, almost Superman blue-black Wayne Newton hair.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And Wayne Newton is a friend
of
mine.
It's cartoon. Yeah, it's cartoon.
Now, when I see Wayne Newton, every time I see Wayne Newton, Wayne Newton is too physical. You know, I'm from New England, So I don't like being touched. I really don't like being touched. And I remember.
Are you saying Wayne is hugging you?
He doesn't hug. He hits. But he hits. He hits friendly. But he hits friendly but hard. I mean, have you met Wayne Newton?
I've met Wayne Newton, yes.
And doesn't he come and go, hey, how you doing? No, no, no. He does that thing, you know?
A little bit, yes.
And he almost knocked Teller down the block, you know? But you don't want to be going, listen, Wayne, stop hitting me. You know, it's like Gary Busey, you know? Gary Busey and Wayne Newton are exactly the same in this regard.
Another Venn diagram.
You should hear Gary Busey sing Donk of Shame. Also, I want to talk about Donk of Shame, Wayne Newton's first hit. I'll go back to Gary Busey, because Gary Busey, I love Gary Busey. I think he's a fabulous actor.
Mm-hmm.
He was on our show BS on Showtime.
He's agreed to do that a couple
times.
He's agreed
to do that, and he's taken the opposite point of view, and I still love him. I just adore him. I think he's a fabulous actor. He's one of those guys, when he's on the screen, you got to watch him, like, you know, like Christopher Walken. But he hits me, and he hits me a lot. Like, I'm walking down the streets of New York, you know, and, like, a block off, I see Gary Busey, and I'm trying to, like, duck into things. Because if you hug me, I'm freaked. But he does that back slapping thing, and that grabbing thing, and the punching thing, and it's all done really joyous and wonderful.
He's happy to punch you.
Very happy to punch me, and it would be rude, you know, to go, Gary, Wayne, stop hitting me. I mean, if I ever see Gary and Wayne in the same place, you know, I'll have to go to a trauma center afterwards. There'll have to be a hotline that I can call up and go, I'm Ben Gillette, I've been battered by Wayne Newton. They'll say, get in line. He hits everybody. I'm going to finish this thing about Donk of Shame. But if you want to call in, we're going to take a few calls today, I think, about anything. You better be a bone marrow typed if you want to call in, because why would we take a call from anybody who didn't care about anyone else? 866-313-FREE, F-R-E-E, which is 3733, which is free FM. You know,
free
for
FM.
Your ass, the rest will follow, as I think Frank Zappa said. And you can also always write us emails, 24 hours a day, something pops into your head. We actually pay more attention to the Gmails than we do the phone calls.
Yes, oddly enough.
But it's Penn Radio, P-E-N-N-R-A-D-I-O, at gmail.com, because everything will soon be run by Google, and I'm glad about that.
Sure. You
know, I'm gonna get back to the Donk of Shame.
Okay.
This shows me more like a Buddy Hacker routine where you finish the joke you started at the very beginning. I once did right before. Remember when Nader was running for president? And I love the liberals hating Nader for that, mm-hmm. because the last Democratic campaign was all about hate. It was just like, Democrats, the party of hate, you know, and I could not have disliked George Bush more, but having every one of the slogans be anybody but Bush, Charlie Manson, anybody, bugged me. And so they were hating Nader, which is really funny, because no one could be more perfectly liberal. And so I was talking on some government radio show, some NPR thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and NPR rolls off the high, so you always sound mellow on NPR. I know what you're saying. And I said, you know, I was in San Francisco, and it was a live show in front of like 600 people of the People's Republic of San Francisco.
Radio show? You're doing a radio show with an audience?
Yeah, they do that. They do that someplace. We don't have an audience, but some people do. If we had, you know, if maybe someday, you know, enough, if people come to me after the show, because people have been lately, after the Penn and Teller show in Vegas, and they've been saying, no, we listen to your radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple of them I'll invite over the next day. And we'll
this is a really small place.
Right. But there's the living room where my wife listens.
Okay.
And we could put a few people in there, and we could be like NPR. We'd roll off the high ends on our voice, so we were really mellow, and it would be great.
We had applause.
And I said, you know, I said during this that Ralph Nader is 100% right. Big cheer. The corporations do control America. Big cheer. But the thing he's wrong about is, that's a good thing. And it is
rumble, a good thing.
Because if the politicians were actually running the country instead of the businessmen, we'd be in really big trouble. So Donk of Shame, which is where I was going when I started this whole thing. I sometimes feel
like Kenneth Lay's favorite song. Is that where this connects?
I think so.
I'm lost.
It's topical. It's topical. Donk of Shame was Wayne Newton's hit when he was, what, 12 years old?
Yeah.
And Donk of Shame, I've Had a Little German, means thank you.
Very good.
And I sometimes think that when songs play on the radio, I'm the only one that listens to the lyrics. Like, everybody else is just, like, whistling along and not paying attention. Because I believe, and maybe you're looking up the lyrics now to Donkey Shane.
The free Your Ass, the Mind Will Follow is George Clinton, actually, is what I was looking up.
Oh, George Clinton. Of course it's George Clinton. And then I think Moon Unit Zappa quoted it during one of the things about her father that confused me. But George Clinton. If you're going to put a Clinton, if you're ever going to put a Clinton in the White House, why wasn't it George Clinton? Who would bring along Parliament and the Funkadelics? So Donkashane, I don't have the lyrics in front of me. You probably soon will, but don't tell me yet. I believe that the third verse or one of the later verses is I recall Central Park in fall. I tore your dress. What a mess. I recall. That's not all. Is that right? Do you have Donkashane?
Yes, I don't have it up, but yes, that is right. I'm astonished.
Isn't that?
You have a gift.
I recall Central Park and Paul. Now, isn't that describing?
That wasn't the gift. The singing part was not the gift. The lyrics were.
I recall Central Park and fall. I tore your dress. What a mess. I recall. That's not all.
Uh-huh.
Date rape.
Donkashane.
Donkashane. Thank you. And you and the alibi for date rape is simply Donkashane.
Donkashane.
Nothing else. Thank you. Thank you. I tore your dress, what a mess, I recall. That's not all. Donkashane. We're out here. 12-year-old boys singing that, and they get upset at the morals being destroyed by porno people who have things clearly labeled. If you want to talk about sneaking into homes, they were telling me, because, you know, I'm younger than Wayne Newton, so if he was 12 years old and he recorded that, I was like 8. And they're telling me that you do date rape. So this will be my defense. I'll just say, Judge, I recall Central Park in fall. I tore her dress. What a mess. I recall. That isn't all. Donkashane, Judge. Yeah, I'm out of here.
He's going to say Alfeder Zane, right? Alfeder Zane, pen.
I want to say, this is what I intended to talk about first, and I got all off on this Lance Burton, Wayne
Donkashane thing.
Donkashane, Gary Busey rant. It's Al Goldstein's birthday.
Happy birthday, Al.
Oh, yeah. Al Goldstein's 70.
Uh-huh.
70 years old today. And I believe, and I'm not going to do any sort of irony or twist or change up on this at all, I believe that Al Goldstein is one of the true American heroes. And people always want to put some sort of take that back thing. You know, they want to say, well, he's a pornographer, he's fat, he's disgusting, he, you know, he did all this stuff. But still, we have to protect his freedom of speech. It's this whole idea that the slippery slope and, you know, if Goldstein goes, then later on comes Shakespeare, you know. That's true, I suppose. But that's not the important part. The important part is that the Constitution was written clearly by whack jobs to protect other whack jobs.
Right.
These were guys that said any nutty thing that popped into their head. And they probably weren't envisioning someone as extreme as Al Goldstein.
Well, at that point, they were as, you know, extreme as Al. They were getting shot at for what they believed and said.
But the genius is that even though they didn't envision Al Goldstein, they left room for him. And when you're talking about where you look for rights, for me, I don't have to work on protecting Al Goldstein because he's, you know, in my heart, he's, you know, I agree with him. So the thing that tests my First Amendment is religious people. You know, I have to always look at the anti-abortion people. Are they allowed to scream? Are they allowed to do this? And of course, yes. Are the religious people allowed to make claims that I know aren't true? Yes, all of that's true. But Al Goldstein, the Topeka case, you know, here's a guy who was, I don't know how you can define entrapment and not have it include ordering a magazine you don't want in a state that doesn't want it, get it shipped in a brown paper wrapper, open it up, and then arrest the guy for sending it to you. Now, Al can be annoying. There's no doubt about it. He says anything that pops into his head. He has no filter. You know, there's a lot of guys like Kennison. Kennison, you know, would claim to have no filter in the pop into his head, and George Carlin. But those guys are always making it funny. There's always some sort of flow to it. With Al Goldstein, it is really, he says anything that pops into his head. He even says mean, hateful things to people that he dearly loves, because mean, hateful things pop into your head, you know. And this last thing, the last time Al went really nutty and lost everything, you know, he was on...
Right.
He went to the, he said stuff.
Homeless.
He was, on, homeless. He was homeless for a good long time. Yeah, and he's now got an apartment. And he's now also looking for a job. If you want a 70-year-old pornographer who loves to eat and right. is full of joy and will say anything that pops into his head.
Aren't there greeters at Walmart?
Yeah, I know,
they
I know.
Hire people to stand up front at Walmart and say, hi, welcome, come on in. That's a perfect job for Al. He's very, very friendly.
Yeah, yeah, that's, man, you know, in Penn World, Al Goldstein Al Goldstein is a greeter. Because there isn't anyone that's more full of love than Al. I mean, he's got a heart, you know, three times the size of his body, and he was a fat guy. He's just so much generosity, so much sweetness, and so much a pure American. I mean, mm-hmm. the fact is that the image of an ugly American overseas
right.
should be our image over here. You know, outspoken, loud, yeah, the world is made for us, grab it, individualist, all that stuff. I remember watching, you know, this is the thing that bugs me so much about Al. When I was, well, my mom was 45 when I was born.
Right.
So I guess when I was 18, she was
old.
And we were watching Tom Snyder, who's another nut. Mm-hmm. And he had Al Goldstein on. And my mother had never seen, and has never seen, and now is dead, so we'll never see, a Playboy magazine, you know, except for the interview that I did, where she said, why did they put all those bad words in, Pam? They guess they have to make you sound like they want you to sound. We were watching Al Goldstein, who was talking about how he had a right to self-screw. And I kind of expected a little bit of an argument with my mom, like, you know, why is this guy allowed to do this? Because my mother was New England and mm-hmm. very, very, very much, you know, Puritan in every way except, of course, God.
She had those buckles on her shoes and everything.
Yeah, she did. She did. You know, Mayflower stuff. And she, you know, very New England. Mm-hmm. She talked like that. And I was a real mama's boy, and my mom and I were very, very close. I just adored her. And we were watching Al Goldstein, and my mom turned to me, and I was ready for this to be our serious discussion and argument. And my mom said, "Does he give these magazines away free?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Does he give them to anybody that doesn't want them?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Why are they talking about this?" Which is exactly the issue. You know, Al Goldstein, the way this country is supposed to be put together is you say any sort of disgusting stuff you want, anything I don't agree with, you know, whether it's the Klan or whether it's Pat Robertson, they say anything. I guess those are the same. But you know what I mean? But you just say anything. And that is what Free FM is all about. Free FM is all about what Al Goldstein fought for his whole life and still lives for. And you can have him for $10 an hour if you're in New York City.
So
and,
happy birthday, Al.
Happy birthday, Al Goldstein, from Penn Jillette and Michael Goudeau in Las Vegas. Let's take some calls after this. 866-313-FREE, F-R-E-E. You know, the bigger guy in Penn and Teller here in Las Vegas with Michael Goudeau, just a couple of jugglers talking about what pops into their heads.
Yeah, Donkashane, darling Donkashane, thank you for seeing me again. But we go on our separate ways. Still the memory stays for always, my heart says, Donkashane.
Thanks for seeing me again.
She didn't press charges.
That was the kinder, gentler time of date rape. You didn't need roofies back then, you know? You didn't need to. They would just, you know, I tore your dress. What a mess. That wasn't all. Donkashane. And we're out of here. We're very, very happy.
A simpler time.
Simpler, more straightforward time. There's this thing I was sent this morning of the Zapruder film, and if you go, it's a big long URL, and I had a tiny URL, but I don't like to read off code stuff.
Sure.
If you go to Google or your browser of choice, Google, do a search for Zapruder stable, some guys have stabilized the Zapruder film. of Kennedy's assassination. And you check Snopes, right? It's not a hoax.
It does not seem to be a hoax. I don't know how it would be a hoax, but it doesn't seem to be a hoax.
I don't know how it could be a hoax, but you know, you always want to check that.
Whenever
something blows your mind, you know, the first thing you got to do is go to Snopes and make sure it's not jive. Otherwise, you end up having Oprah recommending autobiographies that are just made up. Because, you know, we can trust Oprah. So, this Zapruder film. Now, I have for a long while. When I was younger, I was a Kennedy conspiracy nut.
Right.
I believe that, you know, everybody shot Kennedy except
everybody but you.
Everybody but me. And I wasn't so sure about me.
Where are you?
Exactly. Where was I? Well, I got in trouble during the Kennedy assassination. You know, I was one of the ones that was implicated way far out. I was set up by a second grade teacher or something.
Uh-huh.
I was set up by my second grade teacher who said to us, and I mean, this is not fair. She said to us, we're getting the rest of the day off from school today. And I went, yay! Because the president's been shot.
She set you up.
She set me up. And everybody looked at me like, oh, I guess you're part of the Cuban CIA.
Clearly,
you're part of that. But this Zapruder film, if you go and look up Zapruder Stable, they've just, and this is the thing, you know, all this futuristic stuff is happening. I mean, I don't know why, when you talk about time travel, if you went back like 300 years,
okay,
time travel, and you said to people, how do you define time travel? And they would be saying, seeing and hearing something exactly as it happened in the past, which we have all the time, you know. I even have home movies from when I was a kid that my brother-in-law took, you know, that are perfect. You get to see my mom and dad and me as a little kid. That's time travel. So we have this Zapruder film, which is the only record we really have of the Kennedy assassination, which is amazing, because if Kennedy were to have been assassinated today, you know, if that had happened
right.
today, we'd have you know, 1,000 camcorders would be running on it, you know.
That's right.
It would just be from every possible
angle.
All digital. 3D,
yeah.
All digital, put it all together, be able to see the whole thing. But what they've done in this, I don't even know who did it. I can't give them credit because it's like the web. It's kind of this collective intelligence. So we can take credit for it. We all do it as a people. They have stabilized the Zapruder film and cleaned it up, and it is astonishing. It is so clear that it's Oswald in 3. You know, it's so clear that he is being shot from the book depository.
It's appallingly detailed. It's really.
It's
seeing it stabilized was it's frightening.
It's really bothersome
don't,
to watch.
Yes, go look if you don't want to be bothered.
Yeah, the protection of that, the protection of the sloppy film, the protection
yes.
of the shimmer shake. The protection of the shimmy shake emotionally was rather great. And when you see it just out there all pink and naked, and her, you know, Jackie Kennedy hauling ass to save ass, as Lenny Bruce said. It's so clear he was shot by one nut. And that, the Oliver Stone thing, the Oliver Stone JFK, which I'm afraid is becoming what we think of. We did a whole Penn & Teller BS on Showtime about the conspiracy theory. And we fired at melons wrapped in tape. And when you shoot, and any hunter knows this, any physicist and any hunter knows this, which I can't believe that the JFK movie did that well, because there are a lot of hunters and a lot of physicists. They know that when you fire a bullet into the head, the entrance wound is rather small.
Right.
There's not a lot of push. You don't go away from that. And then when you get the explosion out the front, if the bullet does come out, you have a jet propulsion thing that forces the head back. And that was Luis Alvarez, wasn't it? The guy
who
did
the big
photography stuff. And I went back and read in the American Physical Journal or something, the physics thing, his original paper on it. He was a buddy of JFK's. He wasn't part of this. He wrote this whole thing. And we went, you know, Teller and I took Mannlicher Carcanos, you know,
right,
with a scope, the distance, you know, we made the shot. This shot that's impossible to make by anybody, we made the shot. And we had a melon set up all wrapped in tape and like to simulate the skull. And we had like 40 melons. I don't know how many we did,
right,
but a lot of melons. And then we had another melon next to it in a pillbox hat, which was in very bad taste.
That was in bad taste, yeah.
Very bad taste. And we pop off the shot, and every time you shoot that melon, it comes right back toward the gun. It comes toward the gun, comes out the other side, and there's propulsion.
Totally counterintuitive.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, the counterintuitive, unless you've ever hunted, which I hadn't.
Right.
Or unless you've ever had physics, which I didn't. But,
or unless you've ever shot a melon.
Right, which I did.
Which you did.
Which I did.
Finally.
And I was on Larry King, the Larry King. This is way back when one of our books, early books came out, like How to Play with Your Food or something. And I was on Larry King. And I was talking about this, this thing, and Oliver Stone. What's the other thing is, why couldn't this huge conspiracy who can kill the president and Marilyn Monroe and every single other person who was there, how come Oliver Stone just kind of waltzes in and makes this movie? They kill everyone else, they keep it quiet for all these years, and then some pothead, you know, from L.A. or whatever he is, you know, and comes in and makes this movie, and no one can stop him. The truth is told.
The truth is told that it was his parents. His parents killed Kennedy, and they're asking him to cover for him.
So we do all this. We do the shooting. So I do the Larry King show.
Right.
And I'm talking about this. And the next day we're doing Letterman, because we're doing some sort of magic trick to push the book and sell our show, wherever it happened to be there. And Letterman takes me aside, which is a big deal, because Letterman before the show was jacked up like anyone would be, and he's rather private. And he takes me and he goes, listen, I got to know this, Penn. Is Oliver Stone just doesn't know this, or is he just doesn't care? And I go, I don't know, Dave. And he goes, no, really. Does he not know, or does he not care about this? I mean, the physics is so clear. When he makes that movie, does he not know, or does he just not care? And I go, Dave, I don't know. And he goes, what's your guess? What's your guess? And I go, it doesn't matter. And he goes, what do you mean it doesn't matter? It's all that matters. I mean, when you're talking about a psychic, whether he is, you know, knows he's lying, or whether he's kind of tricking himself, that's all that matters. And I said, it doesn't matter, Dave. It doesn't matter. The not knowing the information. Making a movie without doing the work on physics is exactly the same as not caring. It's exactly the same. If I'm telling you something that I haven't done any of the work on researching it, like everything I've said on the show these past days, that is exactly the same as lying. It's precisely the same as lying. And it's so hard for people to see that it doesn't matter if Charlie Manson thinks that what he's doing is absolutely right, and he believes it completely. We don't care. You don't care at all. You know, the Bond villains always have a good rationalization. Maybe, of course, I've now jumped from Charlie Manson to Bond, showing that me, you know, who tries to consider myself a skeptic, has no, they blend completely. You know, the arguments I usually
make. The Bond villains are fiction, Ben.
I know.
Okay.
So, what they
Manson
believe.
Was real?
What they doesn't matter at all.
As long as you know. Just checking that.
I do know. Somewhere in my heart, I do know. You know. But, you know, for someone who tries to be a skeptic, you shouldn't. My arguments usually come down to this. This is how half-assed I am. My arguments usually come down to, wait a minute, Homer Simpson doesn't really work in an atomic plant. You know, I kind of miss the next level that's beyond there. But anyway, if you want to be really disturbed, and if you want your whole sense of drama to be paralyzed, the idea that one nut, Lee Harvey Oswald, could kill the president and change all our lives, that fact is so wrong. It's so much better to have a big, deep, powerful evil than it is to have random chance. People, and I include myself in people, taking that liberty.
You're a fictional character. Stop. You and Homer.
I'm a Bond villain. People would rather believe, at first blush, in an evil God than no God.
Right.
They would rather believe in the CIA, the Cubans, and the Mafia all getting together and deciding to kill the president in an elaborate, impossible-to-pull-off plot with a grassy knoll and umbrellas and espionage than they are to believe that one guy in a T-shirt, whack job.
A nut can ruin something beautiful.
That a nut can just destroy so many things that we believe. And that's what we are. We're two nuts in Las Vegas trying to destroy beautiful things that people believe on Free FM, where we'll talk about anything. We're going to talk more. The phone number is, if we get a good call, you know, we might take it. 866-313-FREE. FREE. Don't just spell it. Live it. got Michael Cadello in Las Vegas. He'll take some calls. 866-313-FREE. Let's try to keep the calls on the subjects at hand, which are Wayne Newton, Al Goldstein, JFK.
We do have a couple of those calls.
That is the Trinity. That is the Holy Trinity.
Okay, we have
JFK, Al Goldstein. And someone wrote in and said that Al Goldstein had a job as a greeter at a bagel place. He lost that job. He doesn't have a job. If you have a job, $10 an hour, I'm brokering it right here, $10 an hour in the New York area for Al Goldstein, 70-year-old American hero, just write to Penradio, P-E-N-N-R-A-D-I-O, at gmail.com, and we will get the information to Al, and he'll take the job. He'll take the job, or I'll kick his ass. Now, what do we got on the Gmail?
We have actually email from Teller this morning.
The only way he gets
good morning,
to talk
Teller.
To me. Good morning, Teller.
Our gun guy at the Las Vegas shooting range during
this is Teller writing. Right?
Teller typed this.
Okay.
Yes, took a party of gun fans out to the desert, had them duplicate the Oswald shot at the correct range. All but two of 24 guys made the shot dead accurate in less time than it took Oswald. And according to the guy at the gun range, the two remaining couldn't hit a bull in the ass with a shovel.
So I want to make it clear that it didn't want to hit a bull in the ass, but couldn't.
Couldn't.
Postulating the desire to hit a bull in the ass with a shovel, these guys couldn't do it, right?
If they wanted to, yes.
So Teller has weighed in on JFK. Is there anybody that's calling in about... Oh, yeah, there's somebody calling in, Jack, on line 13. We have to do that because it's New York that's picking these up. Has some stuff to say about the Don Cashane lyrics. Jack, boss.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing? Really well. How are you doing, man?
Good, good. I think you forgot one word. It's Don Cashane, tore your dress, what a mess, I confess. Don Cashane.
Well, it's I confess.
I confess. Yeah, you forgot to confess.
I confess is in there, isn't it?
I think so.
Oh,
and
man.
I believe I have the definition of Don Cashane. It's check, please.
So German scholars called in.
Thank you so much, boss.
Right.
That's the kind of call we want. He not only had real information, but he sang
it. Came in with a joke,
too. He sang it and had a joke. And so the next person that calls in, if you want to talk about JFK,
Boy. You've
got to have something to sing. You should sing something about, you know, hit me with your best shot, fire away. Let's take Scott, who's in Connecticut and is on line 12. How you doing, boss?
Hey, Penn.
Hey, man.
How you doing? Welcome to the tri-state area.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm very happy to be on in New York. You know, I miss New York every second. How are things going there in Connecticut?
Well, listen, I was listening to what you were saying about the JFK shooting.
Yeah.
I was an Army sniper with the 10th Mountain Ranger Division in Fort Drum, New York for about 8 years.
Okay, so you're not kidding around.
No. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the realities of marksmanship.
Okay.
When a sniper sets up their rifle, they zero in their sights at a predetermined range,
mm-hmm.
which gives them, you know, we have windage and elevation. The elevation is what you use to judge your distance on the trajectory of the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a sniper's point of view, the smart move would have been for Oswald to take the shot when Kennedy was directly underneath the school book depository before he continued up. Now,
Wasn't there a tree there?
Huh?
Isn't there a tree there?
No, there wasn't. At least not according to any of the footage I've ever seen from Dealey Plaza.
Yeah,
What he did was he chose to take the shot when the target was over 200 yards away. And that's a moving target. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now here comes...
But it's moving at 11 miles an hour.
Progress. The kink in the gears of progress is a moving target is something that is moving away from you and has a variable in regards to your yardage, which you have to compensate for because of the trajectory of the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
An Army sniper will have a spotter with him with a laser rangefinder, which will give him exact distance to the target to the inch, so that way he can properly assess his trajectory from the gun to the target. Oswald didn't have that. Oswald had a cheap gun, and on top of it, if you see the Zapruder film, Oswald was the Kennedy motorcade was hit with three bullets. It is physically impossible to reload a bolt-action rifle, acquire a sight picture, and take three accurate shots at somebody like under a high-pressure situation like somebody like the President of the United States.
Right, but a high-pressure situation, a high-pressure situation for a nut is a whole different thing. I am somebody who, the more scared to death and nervous I am, the calmer I get. And there are people, I think they're called psychopaths, that are able to do that. And I don't mean to identify too much with Lee Harvey Oswald, but I also took a bolt-loading Mannlicher Carcano, the
same rifle
he did, and I was able to load it, sight, and squeeze off those shots in less than the time, with no training at all. Now, I know you're a better shot than me, and I know...
Yeah, but on a moving target?
I did not do it on a moving target.
The guys in Vegas on their test did do it on a moving target.
Yeah, the guys in Vegas did it.
22 out of 24 of them.
Away from him, which means his...
Right.
22 of 24 people in Vegas took that same shot and made it.
Right, it is constantly changing, but 22 of the 24 in Vegas just made the shot.
In the same time, with the same rifle.
Now, it doesn't mean that you could do it every time, and I'm sure
And when Oswald was in the Marines, there are three levels of marksmanship
yes,
in the military.
He was the lowest.
He scored the lowest.
He was the lowest, I know. He wasn't as good as you.
He barely squeaked by in the marksmanship. You tell me a guy like that all of a sudden became, you know, Carlos Hathcock overnight?
No, because I don't know who that is. But
it was known as the White Feather, the most prominent
of 24
Marine sniper right. of all time with 132 kills.
Okay. But he doesn't have to. I mean, all he had to do was do it once, and he could have gotten, from his point of view, a little bit lucky. I mean, the fact that it's difficult, the fact that it's nearly impossible, doesn't mean it couldn't be done. So who do you think shot him, and from where?
I think there was probably something to do with the grassy knoll.
Okay, but
I mean,
have you seen the stabilized Zapruder film?
There had to be more than one shooter.
But wait a minute.
More than one shooter.
But
he may have been the patsy. I'm not saying he wasn't up there with a gun in his hand.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just think that is some darn lucky marksmanship for a guy who barely squeaked through Marine marksmanship.
It absolutely is. And no one's arguing with you on that.
Set it up and do the shots and call us.
Yeah, set it up. Can you do it?
You can set it up and do the shots and then call us back.
I'm a family man now. I got no time for any of that.
The heck with truth. I got a kid.
I get a family. But I do want to ask you, the way the head moves, isn't it true that it goes back toward the target? I mean, have you hunted?
No, you're right about that.
Okay, but so that's the piece of information that this film will give you that you may not have time to watch because you're a family man. But thank you so much, boss. Thanks for calling in. You know, I like him. I like him calling in because he knows his stuff, you know.
Sure.
And that's, I'm not going to argue with him too much, of course, unless he's lying. but you know, it's so easy to think that Oswald would have to have done
sure.
this. If he tried it 100 times, he might have only hit it 3 times. But one of those 3 times could be the time that mattered, you know?
Well, you know, yeah, people have done it, and it worked. You know, people who actually went out, non-family people went out, set this up and pulled the shots off. You know, I have to give them a lot of credit for standing up and doing that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll tell you, it was, well, of course, I don't want to create a straw man here, because his points were all very good. And I don't want to put words in his mouth. He did say that the head moved toward where the bullet was fired.
Right.
That's a marksman saying that, which is pretty strong evidence if you watch this stabilized Zapruder film.
Yes, appalling. You see the entry as well as the exit, and it's horrifying.
Yeah, it's really, really, really bothersome. And but I want to thank that caller. And there's a smart guy who knows stuff, who's thinking about it. And that's what I'd like to do. I mean, more information is always good. And he's making a very good point. He hasn't got time to go out and do that. He's a family man now. Somebody might have the time. But thank you for calling. We have a call about Al Goldstein. Or did that call go away?
No, we lost him. We have a call on line 6. This is Ralph from New Jersey.
Take it.
Sure. I think we can pull it up.
You there, Ralph?
Hey,
boss. How you doing, man?
How you doing, brother? How's everything? Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Everything's going great.
Man, look, I just want to say I've been a big fan of yours, literally, besides the fact I'm over 300 pounds, but I'm a huge fan of you guys. Ever since I'm 30 years old, and for 20 years, we were supposed to go to the Ice Capades 20 years ago. They never got the tickets, so instead we took a detour to a small black box theater where I saw Penn and Teller for the first time, man. And you've put me on support just since. I find it so fascinating. Some of these guys, I just have questions, no answers. Do what you want to do. Just don't do it in the street and frighten horses. That kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
you said something fascinating to me, because I don't know if there's a God. I don't know anything. And it terrifies me, the fact that one day I'm going to say, I wish my mom was here. And you said that atheism got you through your parents' death. And I was curious, usually it's the opposite. You know, people, like, they find God, they need to have that fairy tale. I'm curious to know how atheism got you through the pain of your mother and your father's loss, and the fact that you are an atheist, that you now have a child. And
I'll try to tell you briefly, because it's a very complex, I mean, my whole novel, Sock, deals with this one issue, but I'll try to tell you briefly. When my mom died, which was the worst thing that happened to me, and my dad died around the same time, there was no spook show. I didn't have to. I remember talking to my mom on her deathbed, because she suffered tremendously, and she was saying, you know, what happened in the world that I have to suffer this much? And I said to her, it's just random. And the strength that I got from the fact that I knew that my mom was not being punished, that my mom had done nothing wrong, that it wasn't Pat Robertson's world where people get horrible strokes because of a political decision they made. My mom lived a wonderful, beautiful life. I loved her from the second I was born. I still love her now. She loved me from the second I was born, and I still remember her love, and I still feel it because it's inside of me. The fact that that love was real and beautiful, the fact that she treated me wonderfully every day of her life, the fact that my dad never got the memo that other dads get, that it's supposed to be conditional love, but that it was unconditional from the second I was born, and they stood behind me, the fact that they had died, and not in the most pleasant way you can die, but the fact that they died not because there was some force in the universe that watched our pain and didn't care, or because some omniscient, completely powerful force had decided that they deserved to die, but the fact it was just the way life went, and the fact that my mom was thrilled with me and thrilled to have lived her life and loved my father from the moment she met him and till the moment she died, all of that was so real and so honest, and there was no spook show. There was no questions. There was no minister having to tell me, no, really honest, no kidding. It really is a better place. And the fact that you're filled with grief and you've never felt such pain shouldn't even be there. You're wrong to feel that, because it's actually going to a better place. All that stripped away allowed me to really, truly, honestly grieve and to really, truly, honestly love my mom and love my dad. And that helped get me through. And I know that that's not conventional wisdom, but that's what I felt in my heart, and that was my experience. So when somebody like Garth Brooks talks about how Christianity got him through his mother's death, and I'm sure he loved his mom as much as I loved mine, although hard to imagine, and loved his dad. The fact that he can say that and it means something to him also means that I can say that that atheism and the fact that my mom wasn't being punished, the fact that my mom was not going to go to some spook show, and the fact that I would never forget my mom and love her forever was what got me through. So thanks a lot. That's the answer. I know it's too brief. Probably not the right thing to talk about on the radio.
Let's end the show on that.
I've done it. I'm sorry.
We're going out on
Let's not end the show on my mom dying. Let's end the show on me loving my mom and loving my dad.
Let's sing happy birthday to Al.
And let's say happy birthday to Al Goldstein. If you got a job for a pornographer, you know, about $10 an hour or something in the New York area.
Let's get him 12. 12 an hour. He lives in New York. It's expensive.
He's a true, true American hero, along with my mom and dad. Okay, thanks. We'll be back tomorrow.